20th day of January, 1984. The interview is taking place in York Township, Dearborn County, Indiana. The interviewee is Frank Huffmeier, H-O-F-F-M-E-I-E-R. The interviewer is Rita Kirchgassner.
They know that there's somebody left here that doesn't know anything about Dearborn County.
No, well, we hope there is. Okay, tell us when you were born.
Where I was born?
Okay, your birthday and where?
January the 15th, 1900. That's my birthday. I was born sometime after 12 o'clock midnight.
You were probably born at home.
I'm born at home in the house on York Ridge.
Oh, where's the house at?
Tore down, where Eckner lives.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not that far away. Okay, then who were your parents?
Jacob and Mary Huffmeier.
Okay. Tell us about the Huffmeiers. Where did they come from? Do you know what part?
Well, my father, he was born at St. Leon. And his father come from Switzerland.
Did they speak German?
That I couldn't tell you. I imagine they did. They both, we had German at home, had German in the schools. German catechism, and German religion is taught to us.
Do you know anything about the Huffmeiers? Do you know anything about your parents? Anything interesting?
Well, on my mother's side, she was born in Cincinnati.
And what was her maiden name?
Winter.
Okay.
And she was born in Cincinnati. And her mother come from Germany. And, well, that's about as far as I can go back on history on that.
Did you know her mother's name?
Mary.
Mary also? You don't remember her maiden name any, do you?
No, I don't. I don't remember her maiden name.
Because that would have been your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think what else. You don't remember your father? Okay, let's backtrack to the Huffmeiers. Then do you remember who Jacob's parents were?
Jacob.
If you don't, that's okay. It's just that some.
No, it's I can't remember her. His. It'll come to me directly. His mother's name. His father's name was Jacob, and his mother's name was. She lived with him till they died down at the bakery in Lawrenceburg. You ain't got that book with you?
No, I didn't bring it. It's in there. Oh, well, we can get it and we can add it to the transcript. Okay, you were born in Yorkville. Was that where you were raised? Okay, you went to school at Yorkville. You want to tell us about what it was like to go to school?
About like any other school.
You went to a Catholic school, right?
Yep.
What courses did you have? What did they?
Oh, we started in the first grade in there with the A, B, C, D, E, F, and also the, alphabetical order that way. And we started with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and through the, arithmetic. And then we had the first four grades there were mostly, but a lot of drawing in there, and just anything that the sisters thought about bring up in a small grade like that.
How many were in the school at Yorkville? It was called St. Martin's.
When I started up there, it was about 80. 80, 85 along there. Mm-hmm. Of course, they had eight grades there, you know.
Right.
And each teacher had four grades.
Which is a real challenge for them, I bet. How were they really as strict as what they say?
They were strict, yes, I'll say that. They were a whole lot stricter than they are now.
Did you ever get into trouble?
Yeah, one time. With Sister Frances Marie. And she, I'll just say this, she was a heller. That's all there's to it. And every Friday afternoon, the girls would come downstairs to sew. I had a sewing class there, and kind of a home ec, and the boys would go upstairs and had drawing upstairs. And when we come down stairs, Shermie Oss was ahead of me, and he hit that old banister, and he come down flying. And I come down in back of him, but I didn't ride the banister the way he did. And I had my hand on the banister, and was coming down step for step. And I hit the bottom of that thing, and she hollered at me. She said, "You come back up here again." I said, "For what?" She says, "You wrote that banister down there." I said, "No, I did not." She says, "I said to come back up here." I said, "No." I said, "I won't come back up in there. I know what's going to happen when I come back up in there, and I ain't going to come back in there. I didn't write that banister down there." And so she come down, and I knew what she was going to do. She wanted to get a hold of me and put me back into the cloakroom and keep me there till everybody was gone home, see. And I just wouldn't stand for that. So I just went out the front door. And she said, "You come back in here." I said, "No, I won't." I said, "Not while you're a teacher here." I said, "I'll never come back in here again." So I went home and left my cap there. And I don't know whether I had a coat on or not, or whether I had a sweater on or not. Anyway, I just didn't go back up in there. And Father Barron was the pastor up there. And about 3 days later, my dad says, "Well, you ain't going to school." I told my mother, I said, "Don't fix your dinner bucket, because I'm going straight in the South, once and for all up there." And then Father Barron came down about the third or fourth day that I didn't come to school. He wanted to know why I didn't come to school. My dad told him. And he says, "She was dirty enough to hold his cap there so he couldn't wear a cap home." He says, "You better go up there and straighten that thing out right quick. He's not going to go to school until she gives up that cap and apologizes for it." And the priest went back after her. And he made her apologize.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh.
She had to apologize for that. And she owned up to it that she did it. And she told him, she says, he slid down the banister. He said, "No." She says, "I don't believe he did. Did you find the first fellow that went down there?" She says, "Well," she says, "I never did see the first fellow go down there." "Well," he says, "you must be mistaken or something, because this thing just don't jive." He just went down that thing and hit that old bottom of that stairway, and he was out the door. And, of course, I was walking down there. And I wouldn't give up, and my dad told him, he said, "He ain't going to lie to you, because he better not lie."
No.
And he said, "That sister is wrong from one end to the other." He says, "We don't like her here anyhow," and he says, "You might as well get rid of her." And I don't know whether they got rid of her then that following year or the second year after that. Anyway, I never did go back to school then until she then sent my cap down with Frank Krieger. Frank Krieger went to school up there, and she sent the cap down with him, see. And she never did say a word to me about anything, about sliding down a banister or anything. So she was wrong from one end to the other.
Oh, right. That's kind of interesting, though. Well, what do you what do you remember growing up in Yorkville? What was it like?
Well,
What did your day consist of?
Well, of course, in the wintertime it was school, up till I was 14 years old. And I went back and took the 8th grade over to the 2nd year in school. I didn't graduate nothing. And finding a job, I never did lie about it. I'd always found a job to go to work. And of course, then we worked around Yorkville up there, the Billman's lift on Wurzelbach, and he worked on a section. And we'd go down there and clean up his pastures in summertime and fall of the year and for 50 cents a day.
Cleaning up the pastures, what did you do?
Well, now you know what these big parsnips are.
Mm-hmm.
He had just millions of them in his pasture. We'd go down there and cut them off.
For 50 cents a day?
So they wouldn't reseed. We had to catch them before they reseeded, see, before the seed fell out of them. You know. And all stuff like that. And on the other hand, then coming to sports, by every Sunday afternoon, we was not except of anything about going to church. We had to go to Vespers, what they called Vespers. You remember? You don't remember anything about Vespers, do you?
Mm-hmm. Kinda. You went to church in the morning?
Oh, yeah, I went to Mass in the morning and 2:30 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, mostly 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Vespers. They'd sing psalms and everything, and they'd give benediction, and we was released. And then we'd go take off from there and go down to the Ball Diamond at Marmont's and watch the big boys play ball.
Okay, where was Marmont's at?
Huh?
Where's Marmont's at?
You know where Bill Yeager lives over there?
Right.
Right up above their house, they had a pasture there, and they played in that pasture.
That's right on the corner. Toward
Scheibel.
It's on the corner of Keeble Road and York Ridge.
Yeah, right where they there. Turn in.
Right.
But not the Ball Diamond wasn't there, see.
Oh, was it?
No, the Ball Diamond was above the house over there.
Oh, okay.
There, facing Scheibel's.
Okay.
And that was the Ball Diamond, see. And there where we played ball.
How often would you get together? Every Sunday?
Every Sunday.
How many?
Well, when we first started out, we had a... had a team there. By we just picked up whoever would come along, you know, and we'd play anybody come along. See, we finally got the team together with 9 boys. And Sherman Yoss was doing the pitching.
Do you remember all the 9 players?
Huh?
You remember the names of the 9 players?
No.
Sherman Yoss did the pitching.
Huh?
Sherman Yoss was the
Sherman
pitching.
Sherman done the pitching for the small team, and I done the catching for him.
You were the catcher.
And we played that way then for in 1914, 15, 16, and 17, and 18. And George Keeble, he done a little pitching for us. When Sherman wasn't got there, but George Keeble done the pitching for us. And George was the first cousin of mine. He was Eni and Eugene and Red's mm-hmm. father, so.
Mm-hmm.
And... we very seldom lost a game there, and we played up till that time. Then in 18 and 19 and 20, that's a lot of part of 18, I guess it was when it started. Then the big team grabbed me.
Who was the big team?
Well, the big team then was Eddie Ost and Ben Ost and Sister Bill Miller. You know Sister Bill up on the hill here?
Okay. Lived
next to Brookbanks.
Uh-huh.
And he had 2-3 brothers with him, and Les Taylor from Guilford, and Ted Cook from Donovan Creek, and Charles Meltzer from Mount Pleasant Ridge, and Bob Brand from Manchester. And Bob Brand's brother, he was the county commissioner then. Afterwards, he played with us. And that's when we had a lot of fun. And Les Taylor, he caught too, and I done most of it. When Les Taylor didn't catch and I caught, well, he played short. And when He caught, and I played short.
Did you play teams from around in the county?
Anywhere we could find them.
What, did the matches get very intense?
We had the colored fellows from Addison come out, and they gave us the worst time that we ever had. We beat them once, and they beat us about three times straight. Now, they had a team. I'm not kidding you a bit. They had a real good team up there.
Oh, I bet.
Then we played a team out of Indianapolis. I can't think of their name. Well, that was a colored team. And we raffled off a Ford Roadster. We stripped it from one end to the other and just put two seats on it. And we ran around the ball diamond up there, and I forget who won that thing yet. And we raffled it off for 10 cents a chance, I believe.
Oh, my gosh. Well, do you remember, I don't know, what I'm trying to get at is I want you to relate a couple stories, you know, about something that happened in Yorkville. What are, like, maybe two of your most favorite stories of an event that happened in Yorkville? Can you think of any? I know you know a lot of them. Of something that happened. I mean, because around, we never had any murders or robberies, did we?
No. Had chicken stealing, a lot of that, you know.
Really? Was that the gypsies that came through, or?
Well, they were supposed to live down in Bonnell, and they'd come up to the walk up Earth's block, and then overnight they'd go in a hen house, and she'd clean out the hen house as much as they could.
Well, did gypsies really live around here?
Well, I wouldn't call them gypsies. I just call them, I don't know what it was, because it's stragglers coming in.
How do you spell that?
Stragglers?
Yeah.
S-T-R-A-G-L-E-R-S.
What does that mean?
Stragglers? That means a guy that ain't got no home nowhere, and he's just wherever he flops down, he's got a home.
Oh, I've never heard that term before. But can you think of any stories you'd like to tell us? Anything humorous?
Might be too ornery.
Oh, I don't think they'd care. Because didn't they, I mean, getting back to the sports, and maybe it might be a story, wasn't it the Aggies that were real fighters? Or who am I thinking of that used to fight? Did they have boxing matches or anything?
Oh, they had exhibition boxing matches down here in Lawrenceburg once in a while.
Did they? Did anybody from Yorkville go?
Oh, they'd go to see them, but that's all.
Oh, no one
didn't participate in them, no.
Well, we can go on to something else, and then if you think of any, we'll let you. You want to tell us what you did during your lifetime? I mean, what kind of jobs you held or anything like that? Any work you've done?
Well, the only kind of jobs I had is worked on a farm. Worked for Cyrus Smith over here on the Ridge for 1 year. And $30 a month. And worked for Frank Fox down here in the old stone house for 3 years for $30 a month. And through the wintertime, we'd just stay at home and cut wood and this and that, you know. Did a little of everything.
Yeah. Tell us about what farming life is like, because you owned your own farm for how many years?
Well, my dad bought that farm back in the 1890s where we lived up there, and of course I was born in 1900, and all the kids stayed home on the farm with him till Joe left in 18, along in there, and I was gone about putting it at the same time. And he went to, from there, after he raced that tobacco out home there, for off of Fred Miller's farm, then he led, the next year he went to Bullock's Norwood. And that was about 21. I guess it was about 21, and he bought a Ford Roadster. He's driving that around, and I didn't have no car, and then finally I got me an old 19 16 Ford. I bought a 1916 Ford. I got it for, oh shoot, I forget, it was about $60, I think, something like that.
Oh my gosh.
So it could run. And so I finally went to work at Lunkenheimer's and Lake Run there in Cincinnati. You know, they're down on the can't think of the name of the street they're on. Anyway, I worked there for from about September in 1922 to August 1923. And I hooked up with Chevrolet at Norwood. Now, I kept playing ball all these years.
You did?
I was always with the team. And
that was a long drive from Cincinnati to Yorkville, wasn't it?
Well, it took about an hour. Then ports, you know. And I got on their team up there and played with them. We had Saturday ball, a Saturday league then. We were playing league ball, and I had a batting average of over 500.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I could really fly that ball. And then I played semi-pro ball on Sunday.
Oh.
And with a fellow by the name of Meeker, M-E-E-K-E-R. He got up a team, and he finally got a hold of me. And that was in the old Spinny League. And I played with that one, two, three or four years. And then I played with Chevrolet from 1923 to 1929.
Oh, gosh.
And
did you get paid for playing semi-pro?
The only semi-pro you played for is when you hooked up with one of them, Dayton or Springfield, Ohio, or Indianapolis. They were all affiliated with a National League or American League team, see?
Oh, I see.
They furnished them the money to keep up so they get some players, see? Mm-hmm. And Dayton offered me a job up there for $200 a month, but I refused it because I was working at Chevrolet, making $175 a month, and that wouldn't pay me to drop there and travel up to what you call them every day, and then be gone. You had to travel just like these big teams do, see. So I didn't do that. I just dropped the whole thing. So.
Well, I don't blame you.
I got
a
far out. Overgoing.
I know, it's nice and warm. So you played ball all these years. How did you meet the girl you married?
Huh?
How did you meet the girl you married?
Went to school with her at home.
How long did you date her?
Huh?
How long did you date her?
About 2 years.
When did you and Catherine Trustman get married?
October the 25th, 1925.
Did anything unusual happen on your wedding day?
Yeah. Went to bed that night, it snowed up, it snowed the next morning, we had 6 inches of snow.
Really? Oh, gosh. In October, even. Did they give you a shivaree or anything?
It's just at the wedding there at home.
Really?
Mm.
What did they do?
Oh, they just took pans and stuff out of the house and hammered the hell out of them.
Oh, that was fun, though. Do you see any German traditions that are still existing today in the community that were when you were a child growing up?
Oh, I don't believe there's anything around here no more from that.
Can you give us some of the traditions you used to do? I don't know anything real specific.
Now, just what do you mean by I used to do?
Well, if there's not any traditions now, is there a... Oh, I'm trying to get my thoughts together here. I mean, times have changed so much. I guess what we're getting at is that they, you know, people don't cook the same way they do, or they don't, because everything's changed so much, or they don't butcher cattle or hogs as much as they used to do. Things of that nature.
No, we used to butcher about 8-9 hogs a year. I can remember that real easy. Mm-hmm. For years we'd kill that many. Of course, there's 10 of us kids, you know, and the old folks is 12. So that took a lot of meat. Mm-hmm. And we kill about 8-9 hogs every year. And very seldom you ever kill a beef. In them days, just nobody just cared for beef. Yeah, had hogs, you know. And it's just sausage and liver sausage, or meat sausage and liver sausage, and smoked the hams and salted them down, and that was done year for year.
And you stored them in a...
Huh?
And you stored them in a smokehouse?
Stored them in a smokehouse. After there was smoke, you could leave them hang, or you could salt them down in a barrel if you wanted to, you know, and it would finally draw its own water, but you'd always give it a start with a couple of buckets of water, you know, and I would put plenty of salt on it, you know, and that's where they salted their meat. And then they finally got the dry salting it, and I forget, I had quite a bit of other stuff in it, you know, to go through it so the meat wouldn't spoil.
Yeah. Well, like you butchered your own meat. Like when you sat down at the table to eat it, did your father, everything was passed to him first? Did that ever go on in your
Well,
family?
Not necessarily, no. We just, here, you put 10 kids at the table from here on over to that watch car, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe meat was down there, potatoes were down there, you know, and or maybe he had them, maybe he had the meat up here, you know, and he started with the meat and passed around, and the other one started with potatoes down there and passed around, and the other one started with the lettuce and slaw. He had all that at home. He didn't have to buy that, see.
Mm-hmm. But everything didn't start with him. I mean...
No. Mm, not necessarily.
Because some of them said that they're...
Well, there's a lot of them which no doubt did that, as far as that goes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in them days, when the neighbor come over to visit you, it was Mr. Krieger and Mr. Hornbeck and Mr. Scheibel and so-and-so. The kids didn't holler hi, Jake, or holler their first name out, hi, Tom, or hi, Bill, or hi, so-and-so. If they did, there's hell popping right quick. You don't say that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so. That's what it was, you know.
Were your parents real strict with you kids?
Oh, yeah.
You learned manners. Did you ever get it with the razor strap?
Yep. I broke a glass jug one time going over to Hornbeck's to get a gallon of kerosene.
Mm-hmm.
And the jug was worth about a nickel, and the kerosene was worth about a nickel. We had a water hole at the end of the garden. And I set that jug at the end there, and I don't know why I did it, but I did it. I skipped crops across there. Hit the water, you know? Bingo at the jug. That was a dime.
So you got it with the razor strap when you got
it? Well, I got a leg for it. I don't know it was a razor strap, but what was it before I would have got it?
But you got one or the other. Oh. I know. I'm trying to think what else you want to know that you remember. I think I'm going to flip the tape because I want to get into some. You have a reputation for being a good winemaker. Can you go through step by step? How does someone go about making great wine?
Well, let's see. You gonna
Who's going to pay me for this recipe now?
We won't make money off of it.
Well,
Colonel Sanders, you only have to give out specifics.
Wine. Ever since there's people on this earth, there's wine. There's wine before, Christ before.
Mm-hmm.
And been wine ever since. And they always did drink wine. And they never will quit drinking wine. In fact, the people were in this country were everything. Of course, it's just upside down today, of course, that's you know that. But they'll never quit drinking, they'll never quit smoking. And they'll never quit going to the races. Now you can gamble on that. That's the things that they're not going to give up. Regardless how the law goes, they're going to do it despite the world. We know that. And the law is today is so complicated that they've got so many laws on the books that you can never obey any of them laws that they got on the books with the way they handle, and as many laws as they got on the books. You just can't do it. There's no way of doing it.
No.
And then they come along and they want to fine you for this and fine you for that. Okay. When you do that, then you get back in Hitlerism, which we're in today in the United States. I'm a United States citizen. But I got to say this for that. that we're in that part of the world now where they're at before World War I. Everything you get to have over there. And we're getting to do the same thing over here. You get another building code, which might be all right. But in lots of places, the building code, I feel this way about the building code. You've got your own places here. And they all hollered years ago, we don't want nothing like that. That's Hitlerism. Hitler done that. We don't want nothing like that. Then he turned right around and bring it back to the United States on them. You got to have a permit for everything, you know. Which I think is wrong for this reason. They can make a building code if I'm building right here, facing the road. If I put all new buildings out here, if I face a building towards the road, make a good impression on the road, then what I build in back here is my business, nobody else's.
I agree.
I'm the guy that's paying for all this. Okay, now here we go again. They charge you. I mean, they can pay your taxes on it. Okay. Then they turn around and issue a building permit. For what? Issue a building permit. Now, let's just take, just anything you want to build, even dog house, you know, is a permanent lot. They want a building permit for that. Yeah. Then you lay down $5 more for a building permit. On your own property. It ain't right. That's not right.
No.
These big guys, they steal $1 million. They get 5 million every year, you know. The United States government can never begin to catch the crooks we got in the United States today.
No.
There's no question about it. They can't catch them. They can take 1 million crooks over here. Over here sets another 1 million just waiting. When these quit, these start up. When these get shot, these start up. Again over here, you know. And they just do that all the time like that. You know, to me, I don't give a darn whether it's Democrats or Republicans. There's no justice in the law for the poor people. Now, they can go along here and they can appropriate money for most anything in Congress, can't they?
Mm-hmm.
To show you a nice example which they could have done easily and would have worked. But no, they said they can't do it. That was when they straightened out Social Security. Okay, who built the Social Security in the first place? The doctors is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
These guys that had 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Social Security cards, second one, you know. And you go right on the online, you find about a dozen people that worked hard in there
to break his Social Security, and which he just about did it, see.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got some of them had, Richie gave over the radio, over the television, as high as 18 and 20 cards. One guy had Social Security cards, you know. Well, he could do almost anything, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Here comes the guys out from Cuba, in from all these other countries, you know. And they weren't here very long. And the first thing you know, we done over here, is put them on welfare, which they should never be put on welfare. Hell, if we can't support, they can't be supported over there, why shouldn't we bring them over here and put them on welfare?
I know. Boy, this really goes against our grain of our traditions, doesn't it?
Why, well, it's the truth, isn't it?
Oh, right.
It's the truth, you know.
I know.
They put them on welfare. Okay, we pay the bill. They don't welfare. These people, it's their nation, which they put on welfare. They swear up and down. As soon as they get them a job, take them off of welfare. How many do it?
Not many.
No.
Oh. I know.
I bet you down there got people on welfare. You could mention them if you wanted to. That you know darn well. They're collecting probably two salaries.
Oh, sure. I'm sure they are.
It's a devil. It's
a shame. Well, when you, years ago, when you, like, used to make wine and stuff, I know it's not any comparison, did you have to pay? No one had to get a permit. You could do it for your own use, right?
Well, that part there still stands.
You can still do it for your own?
You can still do it for your own good. You can make 300 gallons of wine.
You can make 300. For your own use.
And the law does not tell you, and it is nothing in the law that tells you you can't sell it. It doesn't say you can't sell it. It's open.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use your own judgment there, see. If that law is still that way, which it was here about 10 years ago, because I checked it down in Aurora, and we checked that thing one day, and it said that you use... a homeowner is allowed to make 300 gallons of wine a year for himself.
Boy, if you drank 300 gallons of homemade wine.
Yeah, but it doesn't say a word about selling. Okay, so now what happens? You know, they'll come along and sell it anyhow.
Oh, sure. But tell us, how many bushel baskets does it take to make a barrel of wine?
Barrel of wine?
Mm-hmm.
As you pick them off of the barber, between two and three bushel of grapes makes a good barrel of wine.
Okay, how many gallons is in a barrel of wine?
Actually, you get out about, out of a 50-gallon barrel of wine, you, after it's made, you'll run around 42 to 45 gallons.
Okay, after you pick the grapes, then you let them ferment. Okay, what do you put in?
I use the whole grape, put the whole grape in a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Mash them first and then put them in a barrel.
Mm-hmm. Do you add sugar then?
Then add sugar.
And then how long do you let them ferment?
6 weeks.
6 weeks? And then you get the grapes out and you
put just leave the grapes in there. They ferment in there, and as the grapes ferment, see, there's no more fermentation in the grape.
Mm-hmm.
Get me right, see?
Mm-hmm.
When you put your grapes in there, they go to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you put your sugar in it, they'll stay on the bottom. They'll start fermenting, you know. And they say, as they ferment and get through fermenting with all that sugar in there, see, these grapes will come to the top. So what happens when they quit working in 6 weeks' time? Why, you can... look in this barrel, you know, down. Take a flashlight and look down in there. You can see the marlin grapes are to the top.
Mm-hmm.
You can run a stick down to there and you go through about grapes about maybe 3-4 inches thick. See? Of course, that takes off a few gallon line. Instead of having a full barrel, you just don't get a full barrel out of it.
Mm-hmm. So you skim the grapes off the top then? You take them out of there? Or?
I don't. I just leave them in there and leave them set and... when I start taking the wine off, I drain the wine off and leave the grapes in there, see?
Mm-hmm.
And you just punch your hose through there and suction hose and pull out as many gallons as you want to, you know? Or pull it all out at one time. I used to do that. You know, so pull it out one time and put it in jugs, you know. And then it's done working. Wine, when you make wine only works once.
No, I didn't realize that.
See, wine works once. When wine's through, when that crummy soup working, when you ain't got no life more, it don't work anymore. It's done. You still got that juice, see? But your juice is only as good as you make it. With so many pounds of sugar in it, or whatever else you want to put in with it, but it's fermented. Of course, you can put it in afterwards, too, as far as that goes. You can make all your wine without sugar, and you can doctor it up afterwards, or you can put all your stuff in it when it's working. It just doesn't make any difference.
The only other thing I wanted to cover with you, a lot of them have been, that I've interviewed, said that their parents believed in the hexes. Believed in. Did yours?
No.
Do you know, remember any stories about?
Well, Mom was living, she could tell you more about that than I can, because some of the old people believed in that. I would say, out of a parish in Yarborough, about all this hexing going on, it wouldn't be but a very, very small percentage of it, maybe 2-3% somewhere.
Do you remember any stories that your mother told you about the hexes?
Actually, no, I don't. Because I never did believe in it from a kid on up. I could never see that. And, of course, old folks never did talk about that too much, you know. And once in a while you get company and say, well, that couple's for hex, or this lady's for hex, or the old man's for hex, or something like that. You know, well, hex means just one thing. You're just a nut.
But that wasn't your parents' definition of a hex, though, was it?
No. There's very few parents in Yarkville that I could say that catered to that in a way. I couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's always a difference in a family.
Mm-hmm.
All families are different. They're not all alike, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All different, you know. And, but exactly what it is, why, you don't know. Some people tell you the troubles, some people don't. It goes the same way.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever remember anything about that story in Yarkville where there was supposedly a light, a beam of light that came through? Had you ever heard that?
Well, I've heard that, but there's beam of lights. I can remember way back that you all of a sudden look up the sky, you're in the beam of light, see?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe right at dusk, in the midst of the dusk, when the what you call it changes, see, you might see a flash of light going through there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You might have just had a great big rain. Might have had a big rain go right over there, you know. And you get a streak of lightning over here. You don't see it over here, but a streak of lightning in front of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what
they saw. But they said, one of them I had heard said that when a certain person died, then they didn't see the beam of lights anymore. Did you ever hear that?
Well, when your life's gone, everything's gone. When that pulse stops beating for 5 minutes, or for about 10 minutes anyway, there's no life anymore. So how could you see?
Well, they said that it went into this one guy's grave that had one leg. I don't know who that was. I think it's all...
Hank Lake Miller?
Yeah, that's who it was.
No.
They said it went into his grave. That when he died, they never saw it again.
I never did see it.
What was this peg leg Miller like?
Well, he was an old bachelor. And he lived down Portsmouth. And the last place we lived when he died is right across from Millie Weber down there.
Mm-hmm.
That barn across the road there, you know. And, of course, I think Morrell probably had that bought already before he died. And he just let him live there as long as he wanted to, see. But he used to travel Portsmouth and he'd come over home and this and that, you know, and he always come over home and ask for a glass of cider or a glass of wine and give him a glass of wine and cider and he'd be satisfied, you know, and he'd go back home and I do remember this. You got the thing turned on?
Mm-hmm.
I better not tell you this. Let's turn on.
Is it that bad? I'll erase it if it's that bad.
Okay. Anyway, you remember Tilly Cobb?
Yeah.
Okay. You don't remember where she lived?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they tell this on Peggy. He never had been married. Of course, Tilly never had been married, see. And so he went over there one night, and he caught her out in the barn, feeding the calves. And he raped her, tell me.
Really?
And she damn near killed him, fighting him off. But they still claim he raped her, so I don't know. So whether it really happened or what, I don't know.
Well, how did he end up with one leg?
Actually, I don't know how he ever happened with that one leg, where he got it. How that ever come to get away from him or not, I don't know.
But this is, the whole story revolved around this Peg Leg Miller, now that you mentioned the name. That was it, and because my grandmother had told me the story. My grandmother believed in the hexes and all that. The Nordmars must have. And she said that they always saw these beams of light. My dad would always say it was when they were coming home from a party. And they saw them about three or four times, and they said that Father Sunderman wanted to talk to these beams of light. But when this Peg Leg Miller died, that it went into his grave, and that no one ever saw the lights again.
I don't remember that.
Oh, she told me that story so many times when I was a little kid.
Well, and like I said before, in olden times, people believed in that. So
mm-hmm.
They believed stuff like that flying around. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, stars fall out of the sky, won't they?
Oh, sure. But it's interesting, though, that such a Catholic community, and a lot of these people believed in the hexes. They believed that someone could put a hex on someone, or, you know, did you ever hear, one of them I had heard that they boiled the feathers of a pillow if they were weaved into a crown because the hexes were working against you. And then they boiled the feathers, and the next person they saw was a hex.
You
know,
never heard of that.
Oh, that's what a couple of them told me, but they were kind of superstitious.
Yeah, they were superstitious. Big man, a lot of them were.
Do you remember any of the old superstitions?
Actually, no. I only heard them talking about this and that, and little happened here and little happened there, you know, and which you couldn't hardly put in your mind and believe it, that it actually did happen, you know. That's the way it...
I think there's still a couple people in Yarkville that kind of believe in the hexes.
Could be. You know.
Are they, it's their way of explaining something that goes wrong or whatever. But it's interesting to think that these people really did believe in it. I don't know. I wish I could remember some of the superstitions anyway. But like you said, you, like my father, put it all out of his mind because he thought it was so crazy.
Yeah, it's if you just come down and take it from beginning to end, it just don't make sense.
I know.
The people just got it in their head like that, you know, and this and that, you know.
Were there any other tragedies that happened when you were a child? Anything that you can think of about the people in Yarkville?
Well, right there were below Marvin's dime. It's what you call him? Those there on the left.
Widoms.
Herman Billman used to live there. That's the guy that used to work for cutting parsnips down. But he lived then. You know where what you call him has got his home there, Johnny Shot.
Mm-hmm.
But he lived back that lane there. And the first house back there was Billman's place, and the next house back that was what they called Big Joe Miller's place. And but Billman lived when he first came to the yard, going, he came out of Cincinnati, and she was a simmer. I don't know where she come from, but anyway, they come out of Cincinnati. And they always did think that old Nick Zimmer, that used to live in Yark, whatever, what's it called, the blues lives there now, you know.
Floyd Harbaugh,
yeah.
Okay.
And was some of their relations, so I don't know. But this gentleman lived down there, and his wife had typhoid fever. And he was working on the section.
Okay, what's a section?
Railroad.
Okay.
Keeping up the cross ties so the railroads can run.
Okay.
And he had a chicken house, about that's far from my door out here to the garage door out there. That's far from the house, no. And he had the outside of the chicken house was painted. Inside, the door. I don't know where all the inside was, but the door was. He had that painted white. So he used to have to get up. He'd go to bed no longer about the way he talked about, not just about dark. And then he'd get up about, around midnight and get her a pitcher of cold water. And the well was right on the outside there. And, this one night, he knew that somebody was getting his chickens out there. And he just opened that screen door and he started coming out and looked down there and saw the white door, white on the outside. He just set his pitcher down and tiptoed back in the room and got his shotgun and he came out. And just as he opened the screen door, this guy heard the screen door open. And this guy's name was, he lived down at Monell. Anyway, he lived down at 1L, and he says, Mr. Billman, it's me, don't shoot. And Billman, he just up with his gun, and he said, if you want a chicken so damn bad, he says, I'm going to give you one. And the guy turned. When he turned, he put 52 shots in his butt. Dr. Elliott went down the next day and picked him out. He told him. He picked out 52 shots. I can remember him coming up home and telling that. Mom, my mother, had typhoid fever in the old house just about the same time as Billman's wife had typhoid fever over there, but she had typhoid fever, started with hers about 2 weeks before Mom did with hers.
Oh, gosh. How many shots did he fire then to get 52 pellets?
52 pellets.
Oh, my gosh.
What he had little shots in them, bird shots is what they called them, you know, and they were more of them in than the bigger ones. See, the bigger ones, you know, that's number fours or number twos or number ones, big shots.
Well, I bet he didn't sit for a while, did he?
I don't think so.
Wasn't there a bad fire in Yarkville where a family, where some young kids died? Was there ever one?
Oh, Berkler, yeah, Don Boisevall. You know, down there were, what you call them, Stuyvesant's Bar, that last place down here on the left, up on our hill?
About 2 miles out of Yarkville.
Yeah, anyway, that must be
2 or 3 miles.
Stuyvesant's Bar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Then you go around, you go up the hill.
Right.
Yeah. Put up on the left, yeah. Yeah, they, I was in Lawrenceburg that night, and, well, we rolled out. It was on Saturday night. And, somebody called down there and said that, Johnny Brickler's house is on fire. And they think the kids all burned up and didn't think they had got any out of there. And so we drove down there right quick when we got home. I don't know whether, I believe Mom, she went long down there. And there was not very many people down there, couldn't do nothing. The house was on fire, one or the other, you know. And Johnny was in there, and some people claim that Johnny, it was cutting wheat, and they had their supper ready, and he made them all take a bath, and people claim that they sent some of them upstairs and shot them, and some of them just burned up, and
Anyway, he lost one. He had about 8 kids, I guess. And 6 of them must have burned up, and 2 of them come out of there alive.
What year was this?
Oh, Lord, that's back in the 30s.
So they think he... Did he die in the fire?
No.
But they think he might have killed some of the children?
Let's see. No. He killed himself, I think. I'm pretty sure he did.
He killed himself?
Yeah, killed himself. Then. After he shot them all, he killed himself. That's the way they... Anyway, they finally got the fire marshal out of Indianapolis to come down and give it a going over, but he didn't find nothing. It's about the same old story that he put down was about that much, you know.
Where were the where was his wife?
She died at the place we're with him.
She had died in childbirth or something, or she died before the fire?
She died before the fire, yeah.
So he was left with like 8 children?
Well, I forget just how many. He's left as I'm pretty sure there's about 6 of them died in the fire. I'm not too sure.
Wow. I bet that was a real...
It was a story and a half. Such a small house. And it had, you know, 2 rooms upstairs. And the windows were just about... Well, big enough so a small child could crawl out of it, but then they gave it. Well, in fact, you couldn't smell no flesh around there.
Hmm.
And I stayed there till long about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I went home. And it was all burned down then already.
Oh, gosh.
I got out there, it was full blaze. And that was about... Well, we left Lawrenceburg, and we had the lights on down there, and we drove out there right quick, and we get down there, and it's just full blaze there.
You don't remember what his wife died from, though, do you?
No. I tell you where you could find out.
Where?
Alvin Sprinkler's wife out at Elsa's. See, her sister's.
Oh, okay. She's still living.
You know where they lived?
I could find out.
When you get into Elsa's area, you turn to the right. You go toward Dover.
Okay.
Down that way, I forget how many houses there is. She's on the right-hand side going down there, though. I know that.
I'll have to go interview her and see what happens.
And she could probably give you as good a story as I can over there.
That is such a shame. That is such a shame, though. I can't believe that really happened. I mean, I know it did, but it's sad.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the biggest tragedies. Miracle.
Well, that was the biggest one that I know of till now. You know, with that many lives.
Oh.
I know there's one girl. Some family got her. She's still living. But I don't know whether there's any more besides that or not. I don't even know what her first name is anymore.
But she'd be probably in her 60s or so by now, at least. Maybe.
Oh, I suppose she would be. It seems to me that some family over toward Manchester over there got her. What's she calling her? She could tell you about that.
I will. I'll go see her. See what she says.